Now, during our past broadcast this week, we have been seeking to give you some studies in Paul's epistle to the Philippians, going into some detail with regards to the truths presented in chapter 1. We have reached now a portion where we'll start our study today at verse 12 and go through to the end of verse 20. Philippians chapter 1. Now commence to read at verse 12. But I would you should understand, brethren, that the things which happened unto me have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel, so that my bonds in Christ are manifest in all the palace and in all other places. And many of the brethren in the Lord, waxing confident by my bonds, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ even of envy and strife, and some also of goodwill. The one preach Christ of contention, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my bonds, but the other of love, knowing that I am set for the defense of the gospel. What then? Notwithstanding every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, and I therein do rejoice, yea, and will rejoice, for I know that this shall turn to my salvation through your prayer and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ. According to my earnest expectation and my hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but that with all boldness, as always, so now also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death. And may the Lord be pleased to bless to us the reading of these verses. In this particular section now, we learn something regarding the progress of the gospel in the midst of difficulties. I think we ought to face such an issue that from the day that the gospel began to be preached in the streets of Jerusalem, and during the first generation of Christianity, it had reached out and gone as far as Rome, and in the interval, the preachers had gone to many different cities, but it was never an easy thing to preach the gospel. It met with opposition from a variety of sources. Nevertheless, we discover this, that in the midst of many difficulties, the gospel message made progress and Christianity developed. Now, one of the motivations in the life of Paul was his earnest desire to see the gospel advanced. He realized that here was a message that could meet the needs of men, and he was prepared to suffer all things, and he was even prepared to be humiliated before men if this would promote the gospel. In writing one of his letters, commonly referred to as the Epistle to the Romans, there he sets out a whole thesis regarding the message of the gospel and how men are justified with God. In the very first chapter of that epistle, he mentions the fact that he's not ashamed of the gospel. Actually, it's more positive than that. He's actually saying he was proud of the gospel. Now, Paul had reasons to be proud of the gospel. He was proud of the fact that this message could meet the needs of many people. When he thought of the people that it served the need of the Jews, it served the need of the Gentiles. What other message could do that? because after all, there was a great gulf between the culture of the Jews and the culture of the Gentiles. But here was a message that could meet the needs of both. Not only so, he was proud to promote the gospel because he knew the power that it shows. It was the power of God unto salvation. And because that men and women required to be saved, and this was the means that God used in order to let men and women know how they could be saved, it was the message of the gospel. And Paul was proud of the power that the gospel displayed or showed. Not only so, that leads us to remember this, that Paul was willing to promote the message of the gospel. He was willing to suffer in order to carry its message to men and women, for he knew something of the problem that it could solve. Now, the problem that faced men and women in Paul's day is the same problem that people have to face today, the problem of sin. And he was willing to promote the message of the gospel because this was the power that could save people from sin. It was the power of God unto salvation. Men and women needed to be saved, and here was the means whereby they could be led to a saving knowledge of truth. Not only so, he was willing to promote the gospel because of the pardon it secures. Men and women were rebels. They were alienated from God by wicked works. They had sinned with a high hand against God, and they required to be pardoned. And this was the message that God sent in order to let men and women know there was a pardoning God, and that they, as rebels, could receive that pardon. That being so, when he writes this letter to the Philippians, he seems to be rejoicing in the fact that the gospel had made progress. He's not forgetting the fact that there were many difficulties. He had difficulties from the very start, even when he was in Jerusalem after his conversion. He had difficulties when he set out in the work. There were times when he was stoned, and they left him at one city thinking he was dead. He was cast into prison, beaten with many stripes. And here at the time of writing this letter, we remind you again, the man was in the prison. But he's telling us here something of the progress of the gospel. It's very interesting to notice that Paul is quite composed. Think of his composure. Opposition to him was turned to opportunity. Now, it's not everyone that can do that. When opposition is leveled against some people, they succumb to it and they give up. But for Paul, opposition is turned to opportunity. He said, I would that ye should understand, brethren, that the things which happened unto me have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel. See, in verse 5 he spoke of the fellowship in the gospel. In verse 7 he spoke of the defense and confirmation of the gospel. Here in verse 12 he speaks of the furtherance of the gospel. And again in verse 17 he mentions the defense of the gospel. When you reach verse 27 of this chapter, he's going to speak of your conversation as it becometh the gospel of Christ. It seems to me that Paul allows everything to be tested by this great standard of the gospel. Now he said the things that you thought, the things that everybody thought were against me, have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel. Here we think of the providential workings of God. Circumstances which appeared to hamper the progress of the gospel had become the opening of the door for a pioneer breakthrough. After all is said and done, God has His own ways in which He can reach men and women. We've already learned that when Paul was cast into prison at Philippi, that was the means that God used whereby the Philippian jailer would be led to a saving knowledge of the truth. Suppose Paul and Silas had never been prison, the Philippian jailer perhaps would never have heard the way of salvation. But God, in His providential workings, allowed Paul to be put into prison, and that fell out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel. Let me remind you that some of God's great men have been found in strange places. For instance, now, who hasn't heard of John Bunyan, the writer of that memorable book called The Pilgrim's Progress? John Bunyan was looked upon as being an ignorant, uneducated man. For a livelihood, he simply went about mending pots and pans. He was called, in that particular time, a tinker. But now he was put in prison for preaching. And while John Bunyan was in prison, it was then that he was able to write and think through the great book called The Pilgrim's Progress. I wonder, my friend, have you ever read that book? Any Christian who has never read The Pilgrim's Progress has lost out a great deal. If you've never read it, my friend, get a copy of it and read it. The things that perhaps Bunyan thought were against him fell out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel, for that book has been a means of help to thousands of people. Then again, other men who were taken prisoners at different times have been able to write things that normally they could never have written, things that have become a comfort to others. Sometimes God allows His people to pass through circumstances of illness, and these things appear to be against them. But later on they look back and are able to say, the things that you thought were against me have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel. Likewise, back in the Old Testament, when Joseph's brethren turned against Joseph and sold him as a slave down to Egypt, they thought it against him as evil. But Joseph said, God turned it to our good. God has sent me beforehand to preserve you people and to provide for you during the time of trial. See, God's providential workings sometimes are difficult to understand at the time, but later on when you look back on them, you're able to give God thanks. So we have Paul's composure. Paul says, in effect, I may be in prison. People may think these things are against me, but it's in the providential workings of God, and it has turned out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel, and the devil has defeated himself. For notice, the people who were reached, two different classes of people were reached. First of all, the soldiers who formed the guard and kept watch over Paul. Second, the people who visited Paul, such as Onesimus and others. Think now of these soldiers who formed the guard. Every 4 hours that guard was changed, in plain words. Paul's audience was changed every 4 hours. And for 4 hours that guard would have to stand there, listen to Paul praying, listen to Paul dictating letters that were to be sent to others. He was getting the message from Paul, and no doubt there would be private conversation. The result was this, that Paul was able to reach people who otherwise he would never have reached. Oh, the providential workings of God! Opposition turned to opportunity. People were reached. Then it's obvious that there were those who visited with him in the prison. I mentioned one of them. His name was Onesimus. We read about him in the little epistle to Philemon. Onesimus, a runaway slave, visited Paul, no doubt, or perhaps he may also have been a prisoner, who knows. But at any rate, he was brought into close contact with Paul, was led to a saving knowledge of the truth. And then the day came when he went back again to his old master and was received by him. Not only then do we have the people who were reached, but we are introduced to the people who preached. Christians who previously were timid and silent now became bold and were preaching and testifying for Christ. In plain words, they may put Paul in prison, but there were other Christians who took courage from this. And in effect they're saying, well, if Paul can preach, and Paul can suffer this and be cast into prison, why shouldn't we take up the torch of testimony? Why shouldn't we continue to preach the word? And says Paul, there are others who before were timid. Now they're waxing confident because of my bonds. They're much more bold to speak the word without fear. And then there was others who were trying to bring, as it were, discredit even to Paul. And they were preaching, he says, of contention. They weren't sincere. They were trying to add affliction to his bonds. But now, Paul says, I'm not concerned as to what was motivating them. I am concerned with this, of course, that the word is being preached. Others who were jealous of Paul took advantage of his imprisonment and went out and preached the gospel. Whether it was one way or another, Paul says, I'm satisfied the gospel is preached. The one preached Christ of contention, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my bonds, but the other of love, knowing that I am set for the defense of the gospel. Now, here is Paul's concern. The thing that really counts is Christ is preached. I wonder, including myself and all others who spend time preaching, whether it be from the pulpit or on the air, I wonder, are we all concerned with what we present in our message? Plain words, do we present Christ? Paul says, Christ is preached. That is the main thing. And in that he says, I do rejoice, and I will rejoice. Even in prison again, he could rejoice because Christ was being preached. Here's a concern. It seems to me that Paul stands here like a sentry. He's ready to issue the challenge to all comers. I don't know if each of my listeners understands this, but suppose you were approaching some depot where the soldiers are in barracks. It's a compound for the military. And you approach the gate, but there's the man there who's the sentry. He'll issue the challenge to you. Who goes there? And then, friend or foe, it seems to me that Paul here is like that sentry. He's standing here on guard. He's ready to issue the challenge to all comers. Who goes there? Are you a friend or are you a foe? Are you preaching Christ of contention or are you preaching Christ in love? Friend or foe? There are people today who profess to be religious. They'll take the Bible in one hand, but they'll deny it with their lips. What they're preaching is not the truth. In fact, they're denying the truth. Some are confusing the truth. Instead of preaching the simple, straightforward message that Jesus Christ is Savior, that He died and rose again from the dead, and is able to save to the very uttermost all who are coming into God by Him. And so the challenge comes to every message, is Christ being preached? Some folk are quite willing to preach in order to promote their particular group. Some will preach in order to promote their particular denomination. My friend, listen. When it comes to preaching the Word of God, our motive should be to present Christ and to promote His interests and to promote the truth of the gospel that men and women can be saved. Churches and preachers must always be careful lest they find themselves perhaps preaching even the right message and preaching it with wrong motives. It's possible. Others again are preaching a wrong message, and that's being motivated with wrong ideas. Paul had a concern then. The thing that really counts is Christ being proclaimed. But we also have Paul's confidence. It says, what then? Notwithstanding every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, and I therein do rejoice, yea, and will rejoice. For I know that this shall turn to my salvation through your prayer and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, according to my earnest expectation and my hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but that with all boldness, as always so now, also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death. Paul's confidence was this: Christ shall be magnified. Now, I may be in prison, he's saying. I didn't want to be in prison, I'd rather be out preaching. But if this is according to God's providential dealings, if God would rather have me in prison, I'm quite satisfied. Christ shall be magnified. In the midst of all the storms of life, Paul is able to cast his anchors and confidently declare, I know. This is the confidence of faith. Now, it's easy to declare one's confidence of faith when everything is going well, when everything is in our favor. But here's a man in prison, and some are seeking to add more affliction to him. Nevertheless, he says, if Christ is being preached, I'm happy. And I know that Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it's by my life or even by my death. So therefore, Paul was able to be confident. Now, it's nice when we're able to take up similar words and speak with absolute confidence and say, I know. And because of the things that we know, we cast our anchors, and our anchors grip the solid rock, and we're able to say, I know. I know in whom I have believed, and I'm persuaded that He is able to keep that which I've committed unto Him against that day. I know. And Paul here says again, I know that this shall turn to my salvation through your prayer. If Paul was praying for them, now he says, I'm thankful you're praying for me. Paul profited from the prayers of others who were concerned for him. And they profited from his prayers because he was concerned for them. That's mutual prayer. He received a rich provision of the Spirit which strengthened him. The preeminent thing in his life was to magnify Christ the Lord. You know, I think of the words of the psalmist. He says, oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt His name together. And I think of Mary in her great song. She says, my soul doth magnify the Lord. And Paul says, Christ shall be magnified in my body. Are we all prepared to magnify Him?